Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming out today. This seminar is Python Web Apps with Flask. So I'm going to be talking a little bit about why you might want to use Flask to make web apps with Python as opposed to some other frameworks out there, like Django, which is the most well-known. And the subtitle is And Peewee, which is something we're going to talk about, how to interact with SQL databases that makes it really nice. So here's just a quick rundown of what I want to go over. So first, just one slide that's going to be a quick start, which is how to get everything set up on your computer. I'm going to be demonstrating this on my local Mac machine, just because that's where I've I've done this before and I'm most comfortable with it. But this is definitely possible on the CS50 IDE. So after that, I want to introduce what Flask is and sort of convince you why you should use it in the first place. Then I'll give a quick example of what you can do in Flask, a quick example of what you can do in Peewee, and then I will show you sort of a more complete example application that I put together that we can walk through together. And then finally, in the last slide, I have some resources that you can look at online for more information. This isn't like a complete tutorial of how to use Flask. And also, I'll hope to leave some time for questions. Anyone watching locally, just like shout out in the middle if you have any questions. So yeah, quick installation stuff if you want to follow along or if you want to get this set up on your own machine. I'm going to be using Python 2.7.10. Flask does work with Python 3, but I just like using Python 2 because there are some Python packages that don't work with 3 yet. If you have pip installed, which is a Python package manager, I think if your Python is greater than or equal to 2.7.9, you have it installed already. It's super easy to install these packages. You can do pip install Flask, pip install Peewee. Usually you have to run sudo just so that the permissions work out. And if you are using a super old version of Python, I would recommend updating your Python or using easy install to install pip. So yeah. So the next question is, what is Flask? And I guess first, a reasonable question that I wondered for a long time is sort of what is a web app? Because that's a word that I think is thrown around a lot that I didn't really know. And I think that like the best example of what a web app is, it really is CS50 Finance, where it's not really just a website, but it's something that you can sort of interact with. There are user accounts and all sorts of different things. So like, where exactly you draw the line between what is a website and what is a web app is sort of arbitrary. But I guess the idea, it's like something more than a website, and it's like a useful application. So Flask is a framework for making web apps using Python. And hopefully by the end of this, I will convince you that you could actually write something like CS50 Finance using Python, which I like a lot better than PHP personally. So Flask is, they call it a micro framework, by which they mean it's very simple but extensible. So it has just what you need, but if you want more features, it's easy to bring them in. But just because it's a micro framework doesn't mean that it's only for small projects. I have a link here that says that Obama used Flask in 2012 for his campaign website, which hopefully is something of an endorsement. But the thing that I really like about Flask is that it doesn't really make any sort of decisions for you. Just because we're talking about web apps, I have to compare it to Ruby on Rails and Django, both of which are great frameworks, but they both sort of make assumptions about how you want to interact with databases, how you want to present your views, sort of. And there are definitely good aspects to that. For example, Ruby on Rails has this active record system, which is a really nice way to interact with data. But if you want to use Ruby on Rails, you're sort of tied into that. But with Flask, as I'll show you with Peewee, you can use whatever sort of database you want, and you can just sort of pull that in as an extension into Flask. So that's why I really like Flask. It's that it doesn't make assumptions for you based on things you don't need, really. So why should you use Flask? The advantages are it just has really the core features built into it that you need. So you don't have to worry about understanding a whole bunch of things that you don't really need. You don't have to worry about like turning off features that you don't really need. And then, as I mentioned, it's super easy to add in extensions of things that you do need. Some of them are Flask has their own support for it, so there's something called like Flask Admin, which sort of mirrors that admin panel that Django provides, which gives you a nice visual way to administer your website. But again, if you're making something simple, you probably don't need a big admin panel, so I think that's super nice. And the disadvantages are that you sort of have less power out of the box. So when you first open up Flask, when you just, in your Python program, you just type from Flask import star or whatever, you don't exactly get all of the features that you might want, and so you have to more explicitly list the features that you want. So that's one disadvantage, but I think that for building sort of small web apps, like I'm going to be showing you, that's not really a problem. And what the last thing is supposed to say, which is a typo, is that there are less standardized conventions for how to use Flask, just because there aren't as many people that use it professionally compared to Django. So if you look up something like, how do I do X in Django, you'll probably find it. There's sort of like good design patterns that you can use. But with Flask, it's sort of more go your own way, just because it's a pretty small library. So those are the disadvantages, but I think that it's still a good library to use. So let's just jump right into Flask. This is definitely not going to be like a complete tutorial, but I'd sort of like to give you an idea of how to structure things, and so you would feel comfortable going off and looking at the documentation and finding out more. So let me just open up a really simple example app first and show you what that looks like, and then we'll break it down a little bit more. So this here, let me get it running. So I now have my application running. I'm going to open up Safari, and it's running on my local host. So I'm just going to let me make this bigger. Well, that doesn't help with the address bar, but localhost, it's running on port 5000. And so right now, all this does is when you visit the website, it prints out, hello, Flask, which isn't super useful, but I think it's cool that in this little file here, we have a web server running that is printing out something. So let's actually look at the code for a second and break it down a little bit. So is the size good for everyone here? Cool. So hopefully you're somewhat comfortable using Python. I'm sort of assuming that we can like look at the Python and read through it. If you have any questions about anything, I can also go over that. So the first line is, from Flask, we import Flask with a capital F, which is sort of all of the key features that you need. Whenever you're writing a file and using Flask, you're going to want to import that, just because that has all of the main things. The next thing that we do is we call this function Flask just to create an app object, and you're always going to want to do that. And then jumping down to the bottom sort of quickly, this part here is if name equals main, which is sort of a Python convention, so this will only execute if you run this file directly using Python, then we call app.run, which will actually start the app going. So that's sort of the main structure that you'll have in any Flask application, is you will have this app equals Flask underscore underscore name, and then app.run. So the two things that I have in here are what we call routes. So let's talk about routing a little bit more, and I'll go back to the slide. So the most fundamental concept in Flask is routing, and it's the idea that you assign functions in Python to particular addresses on your web page. So whenever you want to create a new route, you use this app.route function decorator. So if you aren't familiar with function decorators in Python, it's sort of this concept that lets you take a function and sort of surround it with something else. So really what this decorator does is that it takes the function below it and it sort of adds more information to it. But what Flask actually does to make that happen isn't super crucial. But what is important is that before the route, you put this @app.route and then the address of the route. So the slash is what we saw when we just opened up the web page. So that's like sort of the home page. It's just the slash route. And then you have this function. The name of the function could be whatever you want. It doesn't have to necessarily have to do with the route. And then whatever the functions return, the functions return a string. And that string can contain HTML or anything. And that is actually what will get returned to your web browser as HTML. And it will render that. So this is the same code that was from the example that I just ran. So when we visit slash, it calls this hello world function, which just returns a string hello Flask. And that gets printed on the screen. So there's another example, which is when you visit slash hello, it prints out hello word, which should actually say hello world, but let's pretend that was intentional. So let's just pull that up real quick. So if we go to localhost slash hello, it will now print something else. So that's just a quick example of how you can create two different routes. So far, this is not super useful. There isn't like a whole lot you can do just by like, you could just do all of that with having different HTML pages. And when you visit a particular page, it just loads the page. So let's like see some more useful things you can do. So one thing that you might have noticed in the example code that I pulled up is that I had app.run debug equals true. And so what this debug argument does is that when you run your web server, when you run your application, it will, if you change a file, it will automatically reload the server. And so you don't actually have to restart Python, which is super useful. I can show that. Let me pull up my code with the typo in it and pretend that that typo was put there intentionally for instructive purposes. So let's add this back in. So now it says hello world. I will save it. And if we pull back up the terminal, you'll see that it's restarting because it detected a change. And so now when we reload this page, it will print out the correct thing. So debug is super useful for that. Also, if you have any sort of a crash, so let me make this application crash by having it not return a string. So let's just have it return none for some reason. And then when I visit this page, it will just crash. But the server doesn't just crash. It actually gives you a super useful backtrace of everything that went wrong. And what's really nice is that at any step in this backtrace, you can open up an interactive shell here and sort of print out what variables you want to take a look at. And so debugging is really useful for figuring out what is going on with your server rather than just seeing something in PHP like a 500 internal server error, which is super useless. One thing to be aware of is that if you put your app online so it's visible to the public, you never want to leave debug mode on because people can actually use that console that I showed you to execute arbitrary code, so they can print out like any secret codes that you have in there. They can look at exactly how your website is working. So it's really useful for testing, but always make sure to take it out before you publish anything online. So when you're using something like PHP, there's this idea that you can pass information between web pages by putting the information actually in the URL, which is a GET request. But in Flask, you can actually do something sort of like that by having a route that has a variable as part of it. So if you look at this example on the screen here, we have a route that's slash hello slash bracket name bracket. And so if you visit slash hello slash something, that something is going to actually get filled into the name variable. And notice that the function that comes with that route has to take in the parameter name so that it will actually get passed into the function. And then once you're inside of that function, you can treat that like a normal Python variable. And so then it will print out hello, comma, and then it will fill in the name using some string formatting. So to add variable parts to a routing, you use the angle bracket marking. And optionally, you can use what's called a converter. And so if you put this annotation with the with the colon, you can specify that it's an int or a float or a path, and it will automatically convert that. You can also do the conversion within the Python function just by using a normal Python cast. But sometimes if you want to ensure that it's an int, you can put that conversion rule in there. So let's pull up an example of some variable rules. So here, this has the same basic structure with the from Flask import Flask, the app equals Flask name, and then it's running at the end. But we have these two different variable routes here. And the first one is the one that I showed in the slide, which was that it just takes in a string name, and it will print out hello name. And then the second one uses the conversion. So this will automatically convert it to an int, and then double the int and print that out. And we don't have to do any sort of conversion within it because Flask takes care of that. So let's get this running. So I will, when you have a Flask application running, you can control C out of it to stop the server from running. And then I will run the variables. OK, so let's go to localhost slash hello slash Ezra. And hopefully this will say hello to me. So I can pull up the code right next to this. So it took in my name in the variable route, and it filled it in here. So I'll also show a quick example of the doubling. So if you go to slash double slash 3, it will print out 6. So this took care of the conversion for us. So you can also do it with float. And there's something special if you need to specify something like a path that lets it accept slashes, but that shouldn't usually be an issue. So far, we still have sort of just been returning strings, which is not very interesting. We could actually return literal HTML strings. So in the code, we could insert something like the B tag to make it bold. But most of the time, you don't actually want to be writing HTML code in your Python code. It gets really messy, and it's not a good time. but Flask sort of allows us to separate out the HTML into what's called the template. And so if you're sort of thinking in terms of the MVC model that you're familiar with, hopefully from working with CS50 Finance a little bit, you can think of the Python files as being more of the controller, where they are interacting with whatever data model you might have, and then they are calling out to views and passing in information to that view to fill in the information in the HTML that it needs. And what we call those views are templates in Flask. So Flask uses another Python module that it will automatically install when you pip install Flask called Jinja, which lets you sort of add these annotations to the HTML that you see on the screen that lets you put in things like conditionals and loops into the HTML. So it looks a little bit like how you might use PHP within an HTML file, but this is just when the Flask server sort of serves up the HTML file, it will run this templating engine and parse through this and fill things in. So Flask has a render template function that you can see at the bottom here. And so when you visit this page, it would render this hello.html template and then fill in this HTML page. So let's just run this real quick and see what it looks like, and then I'll go through it a little bit in more detail. Let me open up the folder. So your templates are going to go in a templates folder. It will automatically look within the templates folder for that template. So let's open this up. And then okay, so I will run the templating example. Okay. So if I go to /hello/Ezra, it has this horrible, obnoxious marquee tag that I put in. Very nice, very dynamic. I'm a big fan. But what happens if I just go to /hello? So it just says hello world. I didn't pass in a name, and it filled it in automatically. So let's see how it did that and how we can get rid of that marquee maybe. So here, this is sort of an interesting example of if you are familiar sort of with how switch statements work in a language like C, this is sort of like that sort of a fall through where you actually attach two different routes to the same function. So we attach the /hello route and the /hello/name route to hello. And we specify using Python lets you specify default function arguments. So if there is no name, so if we go to just /hello, it will automatically fill that the name is equal to none. So then we render the template with name equals name, so it will pass in the name parameter equal to this name function parameter into the template. But that still doesn't explain like how it was deciding whether to print hello world or print my name. So let's actually look into the template itself and see where that's coming from. So, okay. So within this template, we actually have some conditional logic, which some people would argue you actually shouldn't have a lot of conditional logic within your template itself. It should be more within the controller, but for this example, it's something pretty small. So here we check if name. So if name is not equal to none, if a name was actually passed in, then we will say hello name with the header and the marquee, just all of this normal HTML. Otherwise, we will print out hello world just normally. So a couple things to notice here about sort of how you format the templating is that all of these sort of conditional statements, like sort of like how with PHP, when you want to insert some PHP, you use the less than question mark sign. So it's sort of analogous here with the brace percent. So here we have our conditional code. And then when you actually want to literally evaluate something and print it out to the screen, you use the double braces. So here are the double braces. And then we specify name. So within that, it will evaluate to the variable name, which was passed in from the render template function, rather than just printing out. If we got rid of these, it would just print out the word name. So that's something to watch out for. So another thing just to notice is that when we want to use the render template function, we actually have to import it explicitly from Flask. And this is sort of an example of the modularity of Flask, that you don't have to import things that you don't need. You can just bring in the functions that you actually do need, which is sometimes nice, so you don't have to have all these functions sitting around that you're not using. But also, if you just forget that you need to import render template, you'll probably get a warning that will let you know about that. So that is templating. So sort of we've shown how to make simple web pages and add a little bit more logic to it in terms of the variable routing that lets you do different things based on what URL you go to, and also then give the HTML a little bit more sense in terms of how you want to render things. You don't have to put all your HTML in your Python. But for pretty much every web application, you're going to want some sort of data model associated with it. And so usually, or traditionally, this would be something like an SQL database. And it's you can just interact actually directly with SQL. Python has, I think it's called SQLite3. You can just import SQLite3 and direct and execute SQL queries directly. But I don't know about you, but I really don't like just writing out SQL queries. It tends to get really long and complicated. And so something that I like to use is what's called known as an ORM, which is an object relational mapping. And sort of the point of an object relational mapping is that there are two different ways that you can think about databases. So the example that Professor Malin usually uses in class is the Excel table, where you have these rows and these columns. And that's really useful for how it is represented in SQL and how you interact with it. But another way that it's actually useful to think about it sometimes is in terms of classes and objects. So instead of thinking of each table as having this row that has certain information, you can actually think of it as being each table is a class. And then every instance of the class has certain properties. So in this example, the instances of the class are the rows in the table, and then each property would be a column in the table. So the ORM that I like to use is called Peewee. It's really small, sort of like Flask. I think that they go well together. But there are a lot of other ORMs that you can use. A more popular one is known as SQL Alchemy. And I can't remember why I originally chose Peewee over SQL Alchemy, or I would tell you why I think it's the best one. But we're just going to use this one because I know how to use it. So one question is, why should you bother using an ORM instead of just directly writing SQL queries? And I think the best case is that you don't actually have to write SQL queries. It's much easier, as I'll show you, to do things like selection, insertion, deletion, especially creating tables. It's much easier to write a class structure than it is to structure a create table statement. But one thing to be aware of is that the ORM will sort of try its best to figure out what the most efficient SQL query would be, but sometimes it gets it wrong. And especially if you're working with a big database, you can notice that a query that should be running fast is actually taking longer. And if you look under the hood at how the ORM is interpreting that into SQL, it might be doing something really ridiculous just because it sort of guessed your intentions wrong. And there have been times where I've sort of had to like override it and just execute my own SQL queries just because it was parsing it in a strange way. So there is some overhead just in the way that it sort of compiles your statements down into SQL. So let's look super quickly at sort of a simple example of a data model that you might use. So this is Python code. And so the first thing you want to do is from Peewee import star. So unlike Flask, where you have all these individual modules and you want to import Flask and render template and some others that we'll see later, from Peewee you can just import everything because it's a pretty small library. So the first thing you want to do is actually create this database object. So you have db equals SQLite3 database and then the name of your database. And this will actually create a database object that you can interact with Peewee. And then we have the actual model that we want to create, so the table that we want to create. So within Peewee, each class has its own table within your database. So all of the classes inherit from the base model, and the capital M model is something that's defined in Peewee. So all of your models should inherit as their highest superclass. They should inherit from the model. But what's really cool is that you can actually have your models inherit from each other. And a lot of the time, your data models don't necessarily make a nice inheritance hierarchy. But times where they do, it's really nice because you can have the models inherit from each other. So we define this class student, which inherits from model. And it has three properties. It has an ID, which is a primary key field, which is something that's provided by Peewee. A name is a char field. And a grade is an integer field. So this is this may or may not be how CS50 actually stores all their students' grades. It isn't, but this is how I would do it. And then it has, within this class, and this is something you can do with Python, you can have nested classes. And this is just something that's required by Peewee. So this class meta, you have to specify that the database is equal to the object that we created above. And this says what file is this table actually going to be contained in. So this is something that you have to do with in all of your models. You just have to specify within this meta class that database is equal to DB. So what I usually do if I have a bunch of different models is that I have one base model that I usually just call base model that has the just the meta class and it sets the database equal to DB. And then all of my subsequent models will inherit from that base class. And then I don't have to worry about setting the meta class. So when this actually gets compiled down into an SQL statement, it looks like this nasty thing down here, create table student, ID, integer, whatever. And I think that like it is shorter, this SQL query right here. But if you look at this class here, you can see exactly what's going on. You can see what sorts of fields there are, what they're all called. And so I think that looking at this Python code is a lot more readable than trying to write this SQL query. So in order to actually use the database, we have to connect to it within Python. So I usually write a function called initializeDB that does two things. It takes in the database object DB and it connects to it, which just opens up a connection to the database. If you're just running the website on your local machine, it isn't super big deal to worry about connecting and disconnecting. But if you are running it on a website, you want to make sure that whenever a user connects to it, when they like close out of the website, they disconnect so that you don't have a bunch of people connected to your database all at once. And then when you connect to the database, you want to call db.createTables and list the models for which you want to create tables. So here I just want to create it for the student. And then what's important is to specify safe equals true most of the time. So what this statement will do is that it creates tables for the student model, but only if that table hasn't been created already. That's what the safe specifies. So it won't overwrite your existing table. It will only create a new table if there isn't one there. So you could just create the tables once using SQL, and then sort of have that database sitting there, and then connect to it each time. But it's usually nice just to put in this create tables call so that if you ever delete your database, when you run your web app again, it will recreate it. So just make sure that safe is specified to be true, or you will find your data just sort of getting clobbered every time. And then you can just call initializeDB to sort of establish a connection and create tables if necessary. So the most common thing that you will want to do, or one of the most common things, is to actually insert things into your database. And so rather than having to write an insert into statement with all of the values specified, you can actually call a function on the student class. So when you create a class that inherits from model, it has this create method. So you do class name.create, and then you specify the parameters that you want to pass in. So if I want to add some students to our CS50 gradebook example, I'll put in David, who has a very good grade. He has a 95. And myself, who's not doing so well in CS50, I have a 50. And so the nice thing about what this create function does is that it returns the model that it created, or the instance or the row that it created within the table. And so then you can store that in a variable and work with it later. You can change it around, which I'll show an example of. Notice that I didn't have to specify the ID, because since it is the primary key field, it will automatically increment it if you don't specify it. And in fact, you probably shouldn't specify it, because you might accidentally clobber someone else's ID. And you want to make sure that that's unique. So the most common thing you want to do is probably select out of the database once you have a lot of information in there. And so if you want to get everything, so sort of the equivalent of the select star from students statement would just be student.select. And that will give you back an array with all of the student objects in it that you can iterate over if you want. You can get things out of it. And most of the time, you don't just want to do select. You actually want to specify something. And so you can sort of chain together these function calls, like how you would chain together the statements in SQL. So you can do student.select.where in this example. And then you can specify the conditions just using normal Python Booleans to check things. So in this case, you want to limit what you're selecting to where student.grade is equal to 50 and student.name is equal to Ezra. So that will just get me out of it. And notice one really subtle thing here is that if you want to specify an and or an or, in Python, you would normally use, I think, the word and, actually. But here, you use the single ampersand, which is normally a bitwise operator. But in this special case, just the way that Pee Wee does it, you use the single ampersand to specify and. That's something that I get mixed up a lot, but it doesn't come up that much in practice. So and then once you have all of the students out of the database, once you have done your select and your where or whatever, you can use a for each loop, just like normal in Python with any sort of iterator or with any sort of array. So you can do for s in student.select.where student.grade is less than 75. And so this will iterate over each student in the table whose grade is less than 75, which in this case is still just me, and then you could do something within that loop, like send me an email and tell me to actually turn in my problem sets. So another thing you can do is it's really easy to update rows within the table. So remember back here, when I inserted, I took the value that was returned by student.create and I assigned it to a name called Ezra. And so now you can change the values within that instance just like you would a normal class in Python. So you can set Ezra.grade is equal to 95. And that will update the local copy. But if you actually want to sort of commit that change to the database, you have to call Ezra.save. So you call the .save method on the instance. And so now I have successfully changed my own grade within the database. But then let's say that I get caught changing my grade within the database. Professor Malin is probably going to want to delete me from the class. And so you can call the .delete instance method just on that thing. So if you wanted to go back into this loop here, and actually instead of sending an email to all the students whose grade is less than 75, you wanted to delete them within this loop, you could call s.delete instance. And the very last thing that you want to do is whenever you establish a connection and you're sort of done with what you're working on, you want to call db.close, where db is that database object that we had before. And you just want to make sure that everything gets closed out of. Cool. So now I have sort of an example application. I've sort of pre-made everything just so that there won't be any live coding mistakes. But we can walk through it and sort of see how you would put Flask and Peewee together and make a simple app. I call it CS50 Rant, and it's sort of a simple blog platform. So first I'll run it and just sort of show what it looks like, and then we can look more into the code. So I will open up the terminal, close out of this. OK, so let's just run this. Oop, not slash hello. Cool, I'll make this a little bit smaller. So it's not very pretty just because I didn't make a lot of CSS, but what it does is it has this database of blog posts, and it goes through all of them, and it will display them on the page in order of the most recent. And so these are just some posts that I had saved in the database. So if we want to create a new post, we can go to add a new post, and we can enter the the title of the post, so something like CS50 Seminar. Wow, I'm really enjoying the seminar. Cool. And then you press post, and it will redirect you back to the home page. And then you'll see that the latest post was added. And we still have all the old ones there. So now let's sort of step through all of the code and see how this is implemented. So I think the first thing that let's take a look at is actually the models. A lot of the time when you're designing something, you want to think first about how you're going to represent your data, and then sort of design things around that so that everything makes sense. And that is actually how I did it when I was making this. I sat down and thought, what do I want in a post? So here we have the same structure that I was mentioning earlier, where we do db equals SQLite database, post.db. In reality, you probably don't want to hard code in your names of databases. That should probably be a parameter that's stored somewhere, maybe in like a config file. But in a small example like this, it's OK to hard code that in. So now we have this post class, which inherits from the base model. And it has, again, the ID equals primary key field. Actually, if you don't specify if I actually got rid of this, then Peewee will take care of automatically creating that ID field, and it will automatically make it a primary key, which I think is really nice because usually that's something you want to have. But I like to put it in specifically just so that I remember that it's in there. But if you don't specify that, that will be there automatically. So then I have a date, which is a date time field. And all of these different fields, if you look at the Peewee documentation, it will give you a list of the different types of fields that you can use. For the most part, it's analogous to what you would see in SQL. So there's a char field, varchar fields, text fields, which are for sort of very long text, like a blog post potentially, date time fields, double fields, float fields, all things like that. And you can pass in other arguments to it, which I didn't really specify here. But say, for example, that you didn't want to allow two posts to have the same title, you could specify something like unique equals true. And that's just an extra parameter to the field that when it compiles it down into the SQL, it will specify that it has to be unique. You can also specify something like not null and all the other things you can normally do in SQL. So, but this is a pretty simple model that it has the date. Notice here within the date time field, I specified what the default is. And I specified it to be datetime.datetime.now. Because of the way that this gets evaluated, it actually evaluates the datetime.now when it gets inserted into the database. I think that I'd have to double check this, but if you did something like this, then it would actually evaluate that once, and then the datetime would always be the same. So just if you're doing something with datetimes, double check that it's like evaluating when it actually gets inserted, or else you might be confused. The title is just a char field, which there are more arguments you can pass in specifying exactly how long you want it to be, but here it didn't really matter. And text is going to be the text of the whole post, and that's going to be a text field just because you want to allow it to be a pretty long string. And then we have this the meta subclass that just sort of specifies that we want the database where this is actually opened up into to be the DB object that we created up here. And then the last thing we have here is just this function that we're going to use from our main app to initialize the database to connect to it, and then to create the post table. So now let's look at the main app itself. So this one is quite a bit longer than the ones that we've seen before, but hopefully not too bad. So let me extend this out. Okay. So notice at the top, I imported a whole bunch of other things from Flask that we haven't really seen before. And hopefully we can go through each of these one by one and talk a little bit more about them, sort of by example. But so we have the Flask and the render template, which we've seen before. This request object, which will come up when we look at how the form that I was showing actually works. Redirect, which lets you redirect back from the create new post back to the original homepage. And then URL4, which is something that lets you figure out where on the website a particular page is. So then the next thing I do is just I import all of the information from the models file that we were just looking at. And yeah. So something else new that sort of comes up when you're dealing with especially databases is that you can specify a function that gets called before every request and a function that gets called after every request using this function decorator app.before request. And so this will get executed wherever this function is. This doesn't have to be called before request, but usually that's something sensible to call it. You can specify whatever function you want to get called there. So I specify this initialize DB function that we had back in the models file. So before every request, you want to connect to the database. And then you can specify, there are two different ways you can do this. You can do at app dot, I believe it's after request. And the difference between after request and teardown request is that after request will only happen if the request actually was valid. And so only if the request was successful, if nothing went wrong. But teardown request happens in the case of a successful request or in the case of an error. So usually you want to use teardown request unless you want to do something especially different in the case of an error. But just for closing the database, whether it succeeds or if it fails, we do want to disconnect from the database. So we just call db.close on the DB object. Notice that the teardown request takes in an exception, so you can check if there was actually an error when it was closing down. But here, hopefully, there aren't a whole lot of errors, so we're just sort of ignoring that. Okay, and the rest of it is not too bad. So when we go to the home page, we render this home.html template that'll open up, and it passes in post equal to, and what this does is, remember we have this post model, so we select all of the posts. And then we another thing that you can do, sort of like you can specify the where clause, you can specify an order by. And so we take all of the posts that get selected, and then we order them by the post.date.descending. And so that will specify when they actually come out, the most recent one will be the very first one. So, and then we pass that into the home.html template. So let's actually open up that template real quick and take a look at how that's working. And this is not great HTML, but hopefully we can focus on the Python. But so there's a link to the add new post. And so this specifies the route within the Flask that we define, which is right here. So this is the new post route, and we specify that up here. And so that is a link that will then go to that route within the Flask server. But the more interesting thing is this for loop here. So we specify that this post parameter, which was passed into the render template function, for every post in the posts object that gets passed in, we want to print out the post title in H1. And then below, we want to print out the post text within a paragraph. And here, we can actually call a Python function. So we can call str from time, strf time. And you can pass in the format string that you want to print the date out in. So this is, it's pretty nice that you can actually call this Python function from within here. You don't have to do the formatting on the controller side, because really, formatting the date is sort of something that you want to deal with in the view. And all of these percent things like is not super important. If you look up the documentation for the string from time function in Python, it specifies all these things. But that's how, when we were looking at the homepage here, it formats this with a nice date, and it specifies AM or PM. But normally, if we didn't have this here, you would probably get some garbage date that didn't look very good. And then we just specify the post.txt, and I could have put a couple of line breaks here just to put some spaces between each post. So I think the most important thing in this example is sort of that you can use this for loop. And this is analogous to things that you can do in PHP. You can iterate through everything that gets passed in. And so instead of having to do like copy and paste all the HTML, you just have to write it once, and then you can iterate over all the posts. And this is sort of something common that you want to do when you have a lot of data, is that for everything in your data, you want to do sort of a similar thing. And then just remember that like when you want to print out something explicitly in the HTML, you use the double braces here. But then when you want to specify sort of some information about a condition or about a for loop, you use the percent bracket. So going back to the Python code, so that explains what's happening in the main route when we go there. It just displays all the posts. But then the question is, how do we actually get posts into the database, which is a little bit more interesting. So when you click on the new post link, which we saw here, it redirects you to this form. And that's just a simple call to the render template function, which then passes in the new post.html form. So let's take a look at that real quick. So this one is pretty simple. It has just a simple HTML form, which will look a little bit familiar based on sort of the forms in CS50 Finance. And so we specify here the action. And here, if you're working with PHP, normally it would be something like, it would be like create.php. But here we actually specify a route within the Flask server. And so this route corresponds to the create route that we have here, which we'll go into in a second. And so we specify that it's a post method because we want to send this form data. And usually when you're sending data from a form, you might want to use a post request just so you don't end up with this big unwieldy URL. But you could also use a GET request and sort of pass it in with variable routing. But for forms, it's nice to use a post request here. And so then just like you would do with HTML and PHP, you can specify these text inputs, and you can specify the name of them. And that's the name that will get passed into the request object within Flask. And then we just have a submit button that says post. And here, post is like the name of the button because it's a blog post. But here, post is the request method. So those are the same word, but actually unrelated. So going back to the Python code. So when we call the create method, notice here that you can actually specify within the route the request methods that you want to accept. And so here, I specify that I only want to accept a post method. So if I actually try to visit the page directly, which is using a GET request, it will tell me method not allowed. And so if you have pages sort of like this create page, which I'm only really using to as a way for the form to get submitted, you can specify that you don't want people to be able to go there directly via GET request. Or if you didn't want, for some reason, a post request, you could just specify GET here. But in this example, we just want the post request to be allowed. So when create post is called, when we visit that via the post request, whenever you go to a particular route, there's this request object. And we had to import request at the very top. But there's this request object that gets passed in. and you can access the form data in it, which will automatically get filled when you send a request from a form. And then what I think is really cool is that the form object that gets passed in is just a Python dictionary that contains, if you access, so here in the, let me pull up the HTML next to it just so you can have that as a reference. So the names that we specify here for the different fields, so the title and the text, we then just use those over here as indices into the form data. So that's super convenient. So then we call post.create, which will create and automatically insert this new post object into the database. And I think like this create function here is like a really cool example of how powerful Flask is and working with this, because if you were doing something in PHP, you might have to do sort of a lot of validation. You would have to then establish a database connection. You would have to then execute the SQL query. But here, we just have this nice post.create, which we can then just get the information out of the request object and then pass it into a new post that we're creating. And then the very last thing that we want to do is redirect the user back to the home. And so we use this Flask redirect function. And something that we hadn't seen before was this URL function. So the URL for function lets you pass in actually the name of a function in your Python code rather than the particular route that it's at. So I could have just as easily redirected a user to slash, which would send it back home. But using the URL for function is sort of nice, because if you change sort of the location where things are, so let's say that I changed the home to be at slash home instead, this would still then return slash home, because it actually goes and looks up the name of the function, and it will give you back the URL for that. So sort of on the assumption that you're more likely to change where things are than the names of the functions, you can use this really nice URL for function. And one thing to sort of be aware of that is a little bit tricky is that you think you could just call redirect on the URL for, but actually all of the routes have to return some sort of text in HTML, so you actually have to return the redirect call. Otherwise, you'll get something invalid about not returning a string, because all of these have to return the HTML you actually want to render. And so when you call the redirect, it just gives you, it redirects you to the page, but it actually returns the HTML that you need to execute that redirect. So yeah, go back to the home page. So we have these two different views. We have the home view, or I guess I should say templates. We have these two templates, the home template, which displays all of our posts, and then we have this this add thing. And when you click the post, it goes to a new route within the Flask, but that route doesn't necessarily have a corresponding template. So you can see everything, or you don't have to see anything, but you can still have this work going on behind the scenes, and then you get redirected back to the homepage. So, and definitely it's easy to work in some nicer CSS into the templates and make this look a lot nicer, but all of the main logic is there in the Python. So any questions about that example? I know there are sort of like a lot of different things going on there, a lot of things we hadn't seen before, but like anything, yeah. Yeah, so that's a really good point. So the question was, do you need to like check and make sure that the data is valid and do any sort of scrubbing to make sure that it is valid? Because as you can see here, I'm not doing that. So let's see what happened if I post something blank. So it'll actually just make a blank post and fill in the daytime. So in reality, you would probably want to do something like maybe specify if title is equal to the empty string, then don't do this, or only do it if the title is not equal to the empty string. So it doesn't actually automatically take care of that scrubbing for you. So you still do need to do that. Yeah, good question.
Does it do scrub for SQL injection?
Hopefully Peewee does that. I think it would certainly be a pretty bad library if it didn't do that. I don't know exactly. I'd have to sort of look at the query that it generated. I think that if I typed in a blog post that sort of looked like a SQL injection attack, something like this, if this was like a password field or something, you might do something like this. I think that that will still get literally posted. But I think that Peewee does do some sort of scrubbing of the data before it actually executes it.
That field is designed to take plain text, right?
Yeah, it is designed. Yeah. And so I think that all of the, so this is like correct behavior that it will do that. But I think that Peewee hopefully does do some sort of protection on their end. And if you wanted to double check that, there are ways when you generate a query, so you don't have to execute it directly. I'd have to take a look at the documentation, but you can actually view the SQL that it is generating and take a look at that and make sure that it is escaping things. Another reason why you might want to look at the SQL that Peewee is outputting is if things seem to be going really slowly, you can take a look and see what it's actually doing, because it's sometimes easy to accidentally add in, like, just the way that you write it, you can accidentally have it select the entire database first and then do some sort of operation on that when you really meant to select a subset. And so if things aren't quite going right, it's good to take a look at the request that's actually getting generated. Yeah?
When you first started, you put in the coordinates 5,000?
Yeah.
Is that default with Peewee, or is that something you can change?
Yeah, so the port is default with Flask. If you run it without specifying anything, it will automatically do that. I believe, I'd have to double check this, but you can specify that in the app.run call. I think you can do something like port equals 8080.
Okay.
I think that that will, let's give that a try real quick. Yeah, so you can just specify port equals 8080 and it will run it there, which I think if you wanted to run it on the IDE, I haven't tried this out, but I think that if you ran it on port 8080, you'd probably be able to access the server just like you were with the web server. Yeah, but it's easy to change that if you have any sort of like port forwarding things that you need to do.
Sure.
Yeah. Any other questions? Yeah.
So I saw in your models that, as you mentioned, you have to specify the database for each object. Do you happen to know, does that make it really easy if you have lots of SQLite databases that you want to use for one single web app, that you can just specify a bunch of different ones in your model? And
yeah. Let me open that up real quick. So you're saying, like, if you want to have a bunch of different, like, something, maybe, like, and this is students for some reason, like, something like that? Yeah. So I think that you still, each model would have to still have just one database assigned to it. But if you wanted to have different models that have different database objects assigned to it, you could definitely do that. So, like, if I created a new something like this, and now this is a student that looks oddly like a blog post, I could specify that the database is equal to DB2 here. So I think that's the main way you can do that. Yeah. Cool. Any other questions? So just to finish up a little bit, here are some resources. And these slides will be posted online, so you can actually get to these links. The best resources are really the documentation for Flask and Peewee themselves. They're written really well, I think. So the Flask website is here, and they have a quick start tutorial that sort of will walk through similar things to what I walked through. But if you want any sort of review of the things that I went over, or you thought that I explained something in a confusing way, they'll have sort of similar examples there. Peewee has documentation, and they have a quick start tutorial that sort of goes over the main sort of parameters that you'd want to use. So the things I talked about with like the unique and specifying defaults, the different sorts of fields that you can use, those would all be there. Also, if you have questions about Peewee and you post them on Stack Overflow, the guy who made Peewee actually goes on and answers those sometimes. So if you have a question, that hopefully he'll be able to answer it because he wrote the whole thing. So yeah, I think that's everything I wanted to cover. Thanks for coming out.